How are we doing, everybody? Welcome back to the Sean Atwood channel with myself, Ron Swanson. We are joined tonight by Tess, who is going to give us some insight into the Diddy case from a different angle. A lot of you have been enjoying this content, so we're going to keep it going. And I just want to say thank you for being here. Please like and share and all that good stuff. But before we get into any of the topical stuff, Tess, introduce yourself. Thanks for being here. And tell us a little bit about your knowledge base and where we're going to go tonight.
Sure. Hi, you guys. Hi, y'all. My name is Tess Wright. I have an undergraduate degree from Trinity University in neuroscience, and I went to grad school at Nova Southeastern University, where I received my master's in science and forensic psychology, where I focused on legal competencies and psychopaths. So, okay, well, and criminal profiling. So I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
When you're doing your studies, Tess, and you say you specialize in psychopaths, right? Was that a road that you had to kind of pick to go down, or is it like a set path? And if so, why did you choose psychopaths?
That's interesting. So I think in my undergrad studies in neuroscience, I was really biology based more than psychology based. So I was focused more on the mind than more so behaviors. So what leads someone to be a psychopath? Are we born psychopaths? And then in graduate school, I was lucky enough to have a lot of mentors that specialized in criminal profiling that had studied under John Douglas, Robert Ressler, kind of the OGs of profilers. So okay. I became fascinated with psychopathy, especially when it relates to if we deem them competent to stand trial, what to look for in psychopaths. Do they walk among us? Things like that. Yeah. It's fascinated me.
Do you ever have moments when you're watching a case on the TV or reading about a case where you spot things that you feel people have missed in certain individuals and things like that? And if so, can you sort of expand on that and tell us what that's like?
Of course. I mean, one of my favorite neuroscientists of all time is named Dr. James Fallon, and he's actually a self-diagnosed psychopath. However, okay. Yes. He's like my hero. He's never, committed a crime, been violent, but he is self-diagnosed psychopath. Okay. And neurologically. So he's done a brain scan of himself and seen that he falls into the category of a psychopath. But it seems that in a lot of professionals and a lot of Hollywood elites and a lot of CEO positions that we see psychopaths. And I say not all the traits are negative regarding moving up in the career ladder. We have risk takers. We have people that are willing to, take risks despite of hurting other people.
Sure. People that are hired to put oil pipes through, Ghanaian villages and displace thousands of people. And, if you've never touched on that entire subject of psychopaths hired for Wall Street, police, all this kind of stuff, it's a fun rabbit hole to go down. Now, everybody, if you can just make sure you like and share, get this pushed out. We are, of course, live at 9 o'clock as well with Sean Atwood doing all your Diddy headlines. But one of the things that Tess is sort of going to bring to the table tonight is the psychology of this mafia style element to this whole case, right? Sort of touch on that a little bit and how you sort of feel that way, Tess, if you know what I'm saying.
Sure. When I first learned about kind of the Diddy indictment, I feel like the last time this kind of happened in the media was Jimmy Savile. And regarding the indictment of Diddy, I feel like this is very similar to a mob case going after mafia bosses, RICO charges, human transportation, R word, things like that. So, and the amount of people, this could not have been done alone. So he had his, inner circle of people that definitely aided and enabled him to, commit what he was able to. And I think when you're unburdened by things like money, then someone predisposed to certain behavioral qualities like Diddy, like grandiosity, his ego, when you're untethered by supervision, by money, your whatever qualities you're predisposed to is really brought out. And I think that that's important.
Touch on some of those qualities that you were talking about there, because I think it's very easy to skip over some things that people like myself and certainly the audience might need a little bit more insight into, because I imagine there's almost a telltale select amount of these. If they appear, they'll sort of pop up on the radar, right? So before we get started, let's sort of touch and expand on that, because everyone's already pretty fascinated by what you're saying. So take us a little bit deeper. Yeah, take us a little bit deeper.
Yay. No, so the only really telltale statistical measurement of psychopathy we have is Robert Hare's PCLR, Psychopathy Checklist Revised, which is essentially a measurement of certain traits that will label you a psychopath. We can also look at brain scans. And as far as I know, we haven't, you know, neurologically examined Diddy's brain.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Which we should.
Yeah, I'm with
which
you.
Which I would advocate. But we do have certain traits such as egotistical, grandiosity, self-inflated importance. You know, they're risk takers. Their ego is out of control. They have a lack of remorse. And I feel like the main thing that psychopaths have compared to just a narcissist is a complete lack of remorse for other people, even if they're related, even if they're in their inner circle. And Diddy has definitely demonstrated a lack of empathy for people around him, even his inner circle, with his coercive control. So I think that, like, the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath, from what I've learned in school, is sociopaths have a small level of empathy, but they're narcissists. Psychopaths have antisocial personality disorder all the time. All psychopaths have that disease. And they're also narcissists. So they suffer from narcissistic personality disorder. I'm not saying Diddy completely falls into the psychopath realm, because I haven't seen his brain scan. I haven't, you know, looked into the biological nature of him. Sure. But I would say that he definitely falls into the sociopathy. So lack of remorse, lack of empathy, inflated sense of self. I even recently learned that in, I think it was 2021, he tried to change his middle name to Love.
Yeah, this was the whole next level for Diddy, I think, was this whole Love album and all this stuff. It's weird, man. I mean, like talk about, you know, when you've seen all the Savile footage of where no one knew about Savile, right?
Yes.
And you watch it back with what, you know, we know now. It is so mirrored in the Diddy case, this, because there's been so many moments where when we look back, it's just like, oof. That is grim. Just one quick question. So when it comes to a psychopath, can you grow into being a psychopath, or are you born a psychopath? Like, is there a distinction? And if so, is there a distinction between the two?
So the biggest misconception that I've learned in school is, it's funny, when I was getting my neuroscience degree, the first kind of screen that was on the board was nature versus nurture. And then there was a big X in versus. It's always nature and nurture. So there's this field called epigenetics, which is essentially that the environment plays an equal, if not greater, role in influencing our DNA to create behaviors. So not only would you have to be predisposed to certain narcissistic traits when you're born, but your environment would have to play upon those traits for you to essentially become a psychopath. I am one of the people, and this may be controversial, I don't believe anyone's ever born a psychopath. I think you can be born with psychopathic traits. I think even myself was probably born with certain traits that could have led me to, you know, I've had experiences in addiction and things like that, but I had a great mother. So I got very lucky. And so I think with people like, shout out to my mom. So I think that people like Diddy, who had a kind of a grew up in poverty, you know, had a very rough childhood. I think his father died when he was maybe two, he was shot. So that played upon his predispositions towards, you know, being a narcissist. And then he kind of mirrored those tendencies when he was unburdened by money, when he became famous. So
Do you think when it comes to the narcissistic side, once you reach a level of fame or money and you have that power, it's almost like an evolutionary state for the narcissism? It's like the narcissism evolves. And do you think that because Diddy has been at that level for so long, that's why he was so brazen? I often talk about the footage of him kicking his ex-partner up and down that hotel. Now, when you watch that, you don't think that's the first time this has happened. Do you see what I'm saying? There was no remorse whatsoever. And we know there's been blackmail involved with a lot of these individuals too.
Right.
So we know the level that he has become. So when it comes to people around him, right, when it comes to that individual who knows exactly what's going on, but is happy to turn a blind eye because, you know, he's got bills to pay, where do they fall in a psychopath scale, right? And is it different when you're the working man for the psychopath? Yeah. Like, is there any difference here? Does that make sense as a question? Sorry, I waffle a little
bit. No, it does. I think that money entices people to keep their mouth shut. When Diddy is a commodity, when he proves financial value to people around him, this sounds really messed up, but people are influenced by that to keep their mouth shut. So if they're benefiting financially, with money comes power and that comes responsibility. So I think that, you know, most people, especially if they also have money in his inner circle, we're not only, you know, influenced by whatever happens to Diddy will happen to me. Regarding the kind of middleman or the, you know, in his lower circle, you know, I think that their money is not necessarily that much of a priority. So they're going to be the ones making deals with the prosecutors, making deals with the DA, coming forward with their stories, because like I said, money brings out whatever predispositions you have. If you're untethered by money, whatever dopamine rush you get, that that's normal. Normal people get, he's looking for something just that's completely, you know, dystopian. So I think that there's a conspiracy of silence. We've seen it in politics.
Yeah.
It's starting to come forward. I won't get too conspiratorial on this live.
Sorry. Hey, listen. We can build up to that. Don't worry. It's an insight that I think a lot of people enjoy, because when we dive into this, it's fascinating. But Emma, one of our fantastic regular viewers, has brought up multiple personality disorder. Is there anything that you can detect? Because we often look at, and as well, and I don't consider this conspiratorial, but when I often talk about the cabal and we talk about rebrands and words and symbols, it's almost like, you know, we've got Sasha Fierce for Beyonce, we've had P. Diddy, we've had Puff Daddy, we've had Love, we've had whatever else. Is there a possibility that we're seeing, there we go. Did I cut out there? Did you hear all that?
No, you're fine. I hear you perfectly.
Do you think that there's any possibility that we're seeing multiple personalities play out? And two-part question. Is it possible for multiple personalities to be mistaken for like narcissistic evolution, where you become the next level of nasty person? Does that make sense to you?
It does. So with multiple personality disorder, I feel like Diddy falls more into a narcissist, like sociopathy kind of disorder. I think that DID, which is dissociative identity disorder, is, I don't want to stigmatize people that have that, because a lot of the time people that suffer from multiple personalities have it's based on trauma.
Yep,
it's presented 100%. Usually early on from riot abuse. And they develop different personalities to compensate for the trauma they have. So it, you know, they know to protect themselves neurologically. Yes. So I think that would be something maybe Diddy's defense would use. Do I think that he suffers from multiple personality disorder? No, I think he more suffers from being a narcissist, sociopathy, which good luck with his, you know, defense too.
Well, I think what I've seen with a lot of like fully gone narcissists is adaptability. They kind of can adapt themselves to fit in. And I would imagine when you're at the top of the top and there's nowhere else to go, it's a snowball effect for that. I think somebody said the God mindset or something. It was a really
good God complex. Yeah.
God complex, God ego. That's what they said. Cause the God complex I can understand, but God ego.
Yes.
Like, that is a banger one, because That is what a lot of his co-workers said. You know, at no point did he think Diddy at 50 would be sitting in jail.
No, never. He never thought he would get caught. And I think that's great that you bring that up, because I am vehemently assured that he never thought that he would be indicted.
Right.
Never. I think that's not going to be like a Weinstein that maybe could bounce back. Like, he is not granted, you know, he has to wait for trial. He was denied, what is it, bail?
So yeah, three times. And $100 million he offered for his bail. And I'm sorry, right? But American court systems and legal systems love money, right?
I've been in the legal system, to be fair to the viewers.
Somebody's heart was breaking, declining that, man. $100 million. I mean, but they were saying, Tess, that the reason for that was that they feel like he would threaten witnesses and do all of this. So when you hear a judge in a legal system defining somebody as a danger like that, do you think that backs up your testimony of his level of psychopathy?
Yes. Oh, well, definitely. I think that his case is unique, and that even if he is on house arrest, say he's not a flight risk, like he's not leaving the country. Well, why would he? Because his inner circle, the people that he relies on, his co-conspirators, if you will, essentially could fund him money, could fund him legal representation, could support him in court. You know, he's going to have fans no matter what, even if he is. I mean, Ted Bundy had fans, let's be honest, right?
He had a lot of fans. I often speak to people during The Daily Show that still can't comprehend that people become fascinated and fall in love with these evil, evil characters. And I often use the Welsh PDF file from, I can't remember, the side chat will tell me, but basically a woman brought her baby to him and he done horrible things. And
it's the savior complex of, I can be the one to make you different.
It's got to be that mixed with,
yeah,
the God, that this like Adonis-y style God complex where people are just still so affected by fame. Ian Watkins, thank you. Affected by fame. And another night we'll talk about how in modern society kids can be allured in by accounts that have got 20,000 on Instagram, and that's famous for them. But we'll maybe do a night where we dive into that. Just to remind everybody, please, if we can just do a big push and a like and a share, if you've just joined us, this is Tess, and we're diving into some of the psychology of Diddy and those people around him. And for this first night, and hopefully, if you guys want, we can do this again. It's the fact that you feel like this is a mafia case. You feel like this is being treated like that. And we're going to show some clips and things like that as we go. Yeah. But let's start. Do you want to start with Diddy and kind of work our way out with regards to that? Because I think also as well, if anyone's got any questions, please make sure you put a Q and then a dash and then put your questions, and I'll star them all. And then as we're going through this, we'll get to some questions. But okay, so when you started diving into this, do you want to just start on your own sort of path on this, or do you know what I'm saying? I don't know what the right question is to ask you for, you know, where you want to begin with the mindset of Diddy.
Sure. No, I think that especially considering the financial aspect of it, like the money situation, how wealthy Diddy is unbelievable. I mean, I believe he's a billionaire. So I think that whatever financial status somebody harbors, like Diddy being a billionaire, will bring out whatever predispositions to behavior that Diddy has. So say he's predisposed to narcissistic behavior. He doesn't have supervisors. He doesn't have people telling him what to do. He's untethered. He has no kind of restrictions on what is considered right and wrong. His morality is kind of gray area, right? Because he's gotten away with so much already.
Yeah.
No one can tell him no, which is a word that even I don't like. But if people love you, they'll tell you, no, that's not okay. Diddy doesn't have anybody like that in his life. And like I said, I truly believe that his childhood plays into it too. And it's not an excuse at all for his behavior, but the fact that he grew up in poverty, you know, he lost his father, his mother was a single mom, he struggled, let's be honest. Yeah. But, you know, we see that in trauma, either you sink or swim, right? You become kind of a helpful person in society, or you become someone that victimizes other people. And Diddy clearly chose to victimize other people. And I think that there's an adrenaline thing too. Like sociopathy and psychopathy is all about feeling something. There, what has driven me nuts throughout my studies is people saying that sociopaths don't feel anything. And that's completely untrue. They feel very deeply. Psychopaths feel very deeply. They feel anger and sadness, and they just don't feel much remorse. So sociopaths feel some remorse, but psychopaths are incapable of remorse for other people, like empathy.
Is what they get emotional over often skewed from what we would? And do you think that's why sometimes it's misconstrued for emotionless? Because
Right, exactly. And that's, I think that's something in normal vernacular and on the news that we need to fix. And people, you know, people tend to look up to celebrities for their information, but we need to start looking up to forensic psychologists and neuroscientists, and who say that, you know, essentially empathy is regarding to how we feel regarding other people's feelings. Okay. How, you know, that I feel for you, I feel what you're feeling. And I think that Diddy has a severe lack of that, that he is struggling with the ability to empathize with anyone else. And whatever would kind of thrill, like me, maybe you, somebody, what Diddy needs to be thrilled by or stimulated by is just on a whole other deviant level. Like he needs something just completely.
Okay. So then let's focus on it. So what you're saying is in this frame, he's driven by his own need for what he's doing.
Yeah, right? He has a distorted ability to determine what he needs in order to feel any dopamine rush.
I'm with you, right? So, because that's interesting, because that is very different from somebody who has a big evil ploy to film some people and blackmail them. Because that's almost like the blackmail side of it comes free with his own burning desire. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. And for me, there's a very big difference between somebody who's doing something secretly, like, oh, they think I'm all into this and I'm secretly filming them, than there is somebody who realized that his own driving desires could be weaponized against the whole of Hollywood. Does that make sense? And
yes.
Okay, so keep going. Diddy, his desires, his ego, everything's out of control. What do you think the progression was like for Diddy throughout this quarter of a century rampage? Tell us, if you can, what you think the progression would be. Like, how quickly do you think he sort of spiraled into this?
Of course, I think that he had a lot of coercive control into keeping his victim silent for years. I think there was definitely... You know, in Hollywood, especially, we'll say in politics, I feel like Hollywood and politics go kind of hand in hand regarding psychopathy and victimizing people. But regarding Diddy, he had gotten away with so much. I mean, he settled out of court, right? On many cases already. Like, I'll just pay them, like, we're good. Like, money talks. It does. Mm-hmm. And especially in America, I live here. You know, like, I'm in Texas.
Yeah.
Money talks. Like, people get away with...
Well, here's the thing as well. When people often say everyone has a price, and people are like, oh, I don't have a price, and there's $30 million in front of you. I mean, fair enough, you've been kicked up and down a hotel, right? So it's been horrific. But then someone's like, okay, we could go to court, and Diddy's got enough money to drag this out for years.
Look at Robert Durst, Ron. Like, Robert Durst, in Galveston, his attorneys got him off on a murder charge. So, yeah. I mean, it's money... Money is a huge commodity.
Well,
so
money and corruption as well. I just want to throw in the guy that's arrested currently in Germany on all those like the evidence and the charges against Madeleine McCann. All charges have been dropped. So there's, when we talk about conspiracy and you know, people being used by a system to create a false ending to something as well. I think everyone's sort of getting questions in, and our people. So keep getting your questions in, everybody. So keep going, Test, right? I feel like we're sort of getting to the point where I'm too dumb to really know what the next question should be. So keep going. I'm kind of getting sucked into this whole narrative because
what's interesting about Diddy too is he was there was a sociologist that had interviewed him and felt like he was kind of coming on to her, and she had said that she felt that he was just completely, like, his narrative was just completely egotistical, that he was completely kind of separate from reality. So what's I find interesting about Diddy specifically is his complete delusional reality of where he's at right now. That he's, you know, not going to, I think he thought he would be granted bail. He thought he would be at his house right now waiting trial. I don't think he expects to serve a prison term. And for me, that's
okay.
Sociopathy in itself.
I agree. Right. But here's the thing. Let's focus on the mafia side. So we know for this particular discussion, we're going to assume that he recorded everything at these parties. All the celebrities were there, and there's a list of offenses, from just consensual madness to partaking in something to being forced into something, all this stuff. Let's say he has all of it, right? This is an FBI's goldmine, right? If we've got politicians on there. And when we start talking about this being like a mafia case, that was at the heart and center of a lot of the old school mafiosos, was blackmail, getting things on politicians, getting them drunk in their club, and then sending up one of the honeys, if you know what I'm saying, and then, you know, taking a picture through a hole in the wall. It wasn't as exciting back in the day. There was a lot of just, you know, holes in walls, but it's been it's been done for years. So do you think that Diddy was part of something with the FBI, or do you think that Diddy had nothing to do with the FBI and they've just came in at this and seen an opportunity to go through all of this? Do you think he was ever working with other agencies? Did you ever get that vibe from him?
That's interesting. I wouldn't put it past any Hollywood elite. Oh, I'm going to sound conspiratorial.
No, it's okay. It's okay. We're all friends here. We're all friends here on the Sean Edwards channel.
Okay, this is my test hat, not my forensic psychology hat.
Yeah.
To be fair and transparent with our viewers, I wouldn't put it past any Hollywood elite with that amount of money to be working with an authoritative agency. And I'll say that.
Okay, interesting.
So I feel like that's like I said, that's the test hat. That's the, you know, kind of the little bit of anarchist hat. That's okay.
Our viewers love the chopping and changing of the hat, so don't worry. I just want to say, everybody, thank you, everybody who's been sharing. We're just about to, we're over 900 on YouTube. We're 275 on Twitter. So please keep sharing. It really helps out. And remember, we are back with the man himself, Sean Atwood, at 9 o'clock. I'm just going to hit you with a couple of questions, though. First one, which I thought was really interesting. We do a lot of true crime on here. And Tess's channel, Tess is going to be starting on YouTube.
I'm a newbie, so.
Yeah, it was proper newbie. So I'm firing your link. If mods can copy and paste the link for me. So
thank you.
She's wanting to get into this sort of analytical discussion on true crime. And we do a bunch of true crime stuff here. One that's very popular is with a guy called John Wedger. And Dunnell is saying that you'd be a great addition to that. And I think that's a great point, because John's an ex-policeman. I'm an ex-crazy guy on the dark web. And you're somebody who's got a big, massive degree in science of the brain. So it's good. So let's get to some questions just to get rid of some here. Uncontrollable temper outbursts, more indicative of psychopaths, ? Is that something that is a trait of a psychopath, uncontrollable temper outbursts?
That's a great question. Psychopaths, I feel like the amount that they experience feelings for themselves would definitely lead them to outbursts. What's interesting is I believe sociopaths have a better ability for impulse control. So they're able to essentially take time for revenge. Whereas with psychopaths, they're more inclined to, when the opportunity presents, an act of violence on others just because of the lack of empathy. So I think absolutely uncontrollable temper outbursts, if the time is right. They also have an uncadenced belief that they won't get caught. So like I said, with Diddy, I'm not labeling him a psychopath, but he does have psychopathy traits that would lead him to think I'm never going to get caught. But if you look at his interviews, if you look at his affect, even the video that he gave after, like his apology to Cassie, where he kind of 12-stepped the thing, I'm going to rehab. I've been through the 12 steps. I've, to be transparent, been an addict. Like I've been clean for a few years, but you know, the first thing you're supposed to do is really accept the problem. And it was so superficial and odd.
Yeah.
So, you know,
so here's one for you. So the uncontrollable temper outburst. So do you think a psychopath will analyze risk and reward based off that outburst? So for example, if Diddy was a broke, you know, and had no money, do you think he would have been so willing to kick his ex up and down the hallway without that barrier of infinite money to pay people off?
I think the opportunity, it would be a lot less. He would have a lot less of an opportunity to do that. The fact that he had money, the fact that he had coercive control, that he had people working for him, people to cover his back. I think that with money comes responsibility, and with money becomes not being tethered by normalities that you and I might experience. So I'm not saying he wouldn't do that, because who knows, he could be someone that did participate in DV, but the fact that he was who he was definitely gave him an entitlement to where I'm able to do this to you and good luck. No one's going to believe you. It's my word and against yours.
Even to the extent of, you know, drugging people till they're unconscious and abusing them and all of this, it all ties in with that level of outburst of physical dominance, control, all that kind of stuff. Exactly. I just want to say, doctors, thank you for noticing. I'm trying really hard not to interrupt, and I'm working on it, right? I'm really trying. Okay. So one thing that we often talk about, right, is the possibility of the ritualistic side of this, the possibilities of, darkness. Do you think from a psychology level, there's a way of identifying what we would consider dark souls? Is there any sort of signs to that? Or does it just fall back into the common traits associated with these dark people, narcissism, psychopathy, all that kind of stuff? And then we'll jump back on to Diddy after we touch on that.
No, I think that there's a cult-like behavior, if you will. Hollywood elitism, especially, I feel like, is a cult in itself. I might get backlash for that. But I believe that. I think that Hollywood elite have the same power as politicians do. They have a lot of pull. They have a lot of influence. They have a lot of responsibility that has been neglected to protect other people. I think that Diddy couldn't have done this alone. That he had people, you know, that he had people in his corner that allowed this to happen, that kept silent, that not only enabled him, but maybe participated in it as well. So whenever someone is this powerful, when other people that are in similar power or lesser power can profit from, they're going to jump on the bandwagon. And look at the amount of people that were at his parties. It's unreal.
Yeah, I mean, we can look at that right now.
I mean, I'm 34, and I remember when I was younger reading E! Magazine about these white parties and being like, wow, this looks great. And then now realizing in my 30s, like, this is not great. This is awful.
Here's the exact thing. We were talking on The Daily Show today about the amount of people who are going to have their attendance to the normal side of this. Right. The normal side of this, like, they're going to have their attendance to that level weaponized in the headlines. And we've seen it popping up. And I always say to people, if people are going to post pictures of them being outed at these parties and they're not all in the white outfit, there's a good chance that they're not at one of these multiple ringed events.
Right.
And I think you're right. I think the way that this has become so widespread in Hollywood, and the allure of these Diddy parties, whether it's from the normal person perspective or the more dark side, it's incredible how much many people have just went quiet, right? Do you think that there's a massive fear of guilty by association for those who are in the normal levels of the rings of the party?
Sure. No, I think there's a huge... I mean, there's a spectrum of a conspiracy of silence, right? And we've shown through politicians, through, I mean, you know, big pharmaceutical companies, that people keep quiet when it benefits them, when there's profit, when someone, you know, is serving you well, when you can get a deal, that there is incentive to be silent. And I think that, I mean, right now, I actually had a friend tell me, well, why aren't other people being charged? Like, what is your opinion on that? And I said, essentially, they're making deals with the DA. They're either going to be a witness, or they're going to be, you know, say what they've observed, but there is no way he could have done this alone. And tell me.
Yeah, we're on this channel. We're of the mindset that Diddy is the low-hanging fruit of a massive secret cabal that ends with the bloodlines of the families. And the people that really control all of this are, we wouldn't even know their names. You know,
I think that that's true. And you know, I've always been kind of a truth seeker and kind of participated in the anonymous movement. And I think that, you know, it's, when you know a lot of things, it becomes dangerous for you. So there's a lot of incentive to keep quiet, look at Epstein, you know? So I think with Diddy right now, it's like people are weighing, if they did participate, weighing their options. Should I testify? Well, should I be a witness? Should I keep my mouth shut?
Absolutely. And there has to be that level of reality, especially we've seen genuine cases of Hollywood being blacklisted and all the rest. But when it gets to that dangerous level, you know, if you were one of these people who stumbled through a doorway accidentally, seen some things and then were pushed out and then the door was slammed.
Yeah.
You have to ask yourself how much fear there would be. Okay. Because that is so unknown to you. Again, you're not a partaker. And how prevalent is fear, right, when it comes to controlling masses like this? I mean, and how prevalent would evidence of violence or that control method have to be for so many people to fear this test? Does that make sense?
Yes. No, I think especially being American, being in America, that fear is a dominant, you know, feeling regarding our media, regarding politics, regarding Hollywood, that fear is a powerful motivator, and that fear and financial power go hand in hand, coercive control. So especially in regards to our news, like American news is it's fear-based. It's meant to control. So it's the same thing regarding Diddy and his inner circle, with his, the people that were in his, you know, his recording studio.
Keep people in line. I don't know if it's me that's paused or if it's Tess. Let me know in the side chat if you can still hear and see me. And I imagine Tess is just froze, but let me know, because sometimes it could be. Oh, there we go. Are you back? There we go. Okay. It might have just been me that froze, everybody. I do apologize. But Tess just went completely black.
It's funny you asked that question, because I wrote a paper when I was getting my neuroscience degree about American news and fear-based media, and how our media is centered on provoking fear in civilians, and how it's one of the best ways in which, you know, the government, in which Hollywood can control people, is through fear. And why do we idolize the Diddys? Why do we idolize the Beyoncés? Why do we idolize people like this and not the, you know, James Fallons or the Robert Wrestlers or the criminal profilers? Why do we favor people that are celebrities for being actors or musicians? Why? Why is that? Because it gives us a dopamine rush, because we want to feel something. You know, I always kind of looked up to scientists, but my friends all looked up to the Diddys,
Do you think that's widely connected to what you're exposed to? Because what you said earlier about, you know, DNA can be effectively by the surroundings and the nurture. Do you think that when you boil it down to success breeds success and poverty breeds poverty at its simplest, is really what's at play with a lot of the upper echelons? Do you think that, you know, people coming into a normal life from birth, it's already so heavily skewed against them because of the imbalance? Do you think that is a prevalent effect in all this?
Sure. I mean, I, you know, I have my own mental health challenge issues. Like I said, I have my own issues with addictions. I was a heroin addict. I've been clean for years, but I had a great mother and I had a supportive family. If I didn't, I don't know if I would be here talking to you right now. I don't know if I would have been violent. I am very fortunate. Shout out to mom. to be able to do this and share my story and speak on my experience and my knowledge. But regarding Diddy and the way he was raised, whatever you're predisposed with, whatever your brain that you're born with is, your DNA, how it's expressed, is going to be significantly impacted by the environment, especially during your critical years of development. So between ages like 0 to maybe 6, if you grew up in a loving household, like my idol, like James Fallon, the neuroscientist, he's a neurobiologically would be considered a psychopath, but he had a good mother and a supportive childhood. So he attributes the fact that he's kind of been able to be married, have kids, live a normal life, be an academic. But regarding someone like Diddy that maybe had a rough start, I think that just kind of acted on his predispositions to behavior because, like I said, I hear nature versus nurture all the time. And it drives me nuts because it's nature and nurture. If you are predisposed to being a psychopath, meaning you have qualities that might show that you could develop into one, if you have a safe environment, if you have supportive parents, if you have a, not even parents, caregivers, friends, family friends, adoptive parents, people in your circle, teachers that recognize these signs, chances are you're going to be okay. And so, not all psychopaths are violent, but with Diddy, he, money, power, fame, childhood, seek of control, lack of impulse control, all contributed to him, you know, feeling like he is, I feel like he thought he was invincible.
Well, just hearing you say all that, and then seeing this comment, with all of that being prefix knowledge, and then we look at how we are clearly, these people are selected to be put in front of us to idolize from the mainstream. This is certainly a control tactic. This is creating this false idol. It's creating this generation of like, you know, 14-year-olds who want to, you know, have lipstick on and go out looking all glammed up and all this kind of stuff. And listen, I get it. I get it. People want to grow up. But it seems now that there's like 10-year-olds using like wrinkle creams and all this kind of stuff. Now, I'm all for the cuteness of you and your daughter at a young age, you know, putting a bit of cream on your nose, all this kind of fun stuff that, that parents have. But like when we're genuinely talking about 9-year-olds doing makeup tutorials and all, and I don't mean in a fun way, not like when my daughters do makeup tutorials and my eyes are at risk because this is how they apply the makeup, right? I mean, like proper. Like, why is a 9-year-old putting on makeup so well that she doesn't look like she's wearing makeup to teach other kids?
I love the comment, we don't idolize them, they were pushed on us.
That's the point, right? That's the point. Yeah, exactly.
You know what? And that opens my mind to a lot of possibilities that maybe I didn't consider, that it's so prevalent. Look at TikTok, Instagram. I mean, I'm a millennial, so I kind of, you know, I was a late bloomer. I didn't wear makeup till high school. I still played with dolls in middle school. So that's for great. Me.
That's called being a normal person. All right.
So for me, I didn't discover that till later on. And I feel special regarding that. But I think that was a beautiful point, that they are pushed on us. They are in our media. Our news is quintessentially, you know, our expert. What is an expert? What is source checking? Like, who are your sources? And that's the main thing too, is I have friends, well, Diddy did this. Well, what are your sources? Where did you find that source? What is the article you read? What has the author written other than this? What are their political views? Where did they go to school? And I'm not saying school makes you smart. I don't think that. I had my master's because I think that school kept me in line, or I would have gone off
the deep end. Sure. No, absolutely.
I needed structure in my life, and it gave me structure. Whereas if I was on my own, I'm not smart enough where I could have maneuvered it.
Yeah.
But reading makes you smart. Reading everything makes you smart. Reading scholarly articles makes you smart. Reading both sides of an argument makes you smart.
Yeah, so I agree.
It's true. It's an attention too. So our news is meant to capture our attention. So in every way that it can, it will prey on us, and it preys on our insecurity. And what's interesting about Diddy is Diddy's like the opposite of, like, I have sometimes crippling self-doubt, or whoever has crippling self-doubt, Diddy's like the opposite. Like he's
the God complex, 100%.
He is a swan in every subject that he will talk about.
Well, look, I've got an interesting one for you, because I think a lot of people have seen this clip of Diddy and his mom, right? I don't know if you have. Now, we're going to watch this through, right? Okay. It's a couple of minutes long, and I think you're a great person to analyze this with us, because there's a lot to unpack. So let's watch.
Okay.
Yeah, my mom's gorgeous.
Well, let me. So first one, my mom's gorgeous. All right, I'm just in case you missed it. All right.
It's my mom. Call Mom Dukes.
Hi.
She's getting a drip with me. She's hot. What's up, Mom?
Everything's good, baby.
Yeah.
I love you too.
Mom, freshly dipped, though.
For next of all, I want to point out the fact that he deliberately shows the fact that she's got the white nails. Sorry, my internet's going crazy, everybody.
Yeah, okay.
Hang on.
I was trying to show.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, my mom's the same.
Hang on a second. Is it jumping all over the place? Is it just my internet, everybody? I do apologize.
No, it's okay. It's a little choppy, but
it's a little choppy, right? So just bear with me. Let me just shut down Discord and a couple other things. Apologies, everybody.
This is him and his mom,
right? Apparently, after a freak-off party where they are sitting getting a hydration drip. It's all over the place. Hang on a second. There's a big internet spike at my end. Just bear with me, everybody. I'm just shutting everything down. I do apologize. This is what happens with live content. All right. Let's have a look. Okay, so obviously we had the part where he said she was gorgeous. They've done the lip kiss. Did you see that? Let's see how we get on.
I love you too.
And he's going to pan down. You're going to see her white fingernails, which is obviously representative of the white part.
Yeah, my mom's single. I ain't gonna hate on my mom. She's single. Me and my mom talked about one time on a dating show. She's so picky. They don't stand. But yeah, that'd be the funniest show in the world. I don't even want to get started with you. We're not doing that. My mom's single. Yeah, for real. Mom, Duke might have a good time. He ain't sitting in the house playing. Outside moving and shaking, baby. She told me to strip club. I don't care. Real. It's my dog. I'm going to live life. We out here moving and grooving. My mom told me to keep moving, baby. She can touch the floor with her palms.
Okay, so she can touch the floor with her palms. Obviously, I think we know what he's referencing there. Talking about his mom being single. Is there any alarm bells that go off to you in this? And if so, could you break it down for us? Because this is one that we've all watched as a community a couple of times on these shows that stands out as one of these moments where there seems to be an odd bond. And once we sort of touch on this, we're going to just answer some questions about the family life of Diddy, I think. But what does that say to you?
Two things. One, he was probably husbandried by his mom when he was in early childhood, since his father passed away. He was probably, and I'm not saying this was intentional by his mother or meant to be vindictive, but that he was probably served as kind of a male role, you know, hold it down, be there for my mom. But the fact that she's, you know, their interactions are like this after a, you know, a white party, a Diddy party, leads me to think that she's completely enabled his behavior. That if you really love someone, you say, knock it off. Like, this is unacceptable. That he's never had, I feel like Diddy's the type of person that's, when you reach a level of fame, you don't have anybody telling you no. You have no supervisors, you have no gatekeepers, you have nobody telling you this is not okay, because you're an advocate, you're an asset to them. And he's become an asset to his mother. I mean, look, she's, you know, whether consciously or subconsciously, she's, you know, enabled his behavior.
Yeah.
And so, it's concerning. It's concerning.
Do you not think, though, we've seen a lot of weird mothers in Hollywood, right? But to turn around and say the things he said, going to strip clubs, all of this kind of thing, is there not a certain psychology where people admit to a lower level thing to sort of make the true horrors that they're doing make them sound better? Because I can't believe that this is like how they've been as adults. Do you think that this sort of conditioning could have been a sign of how he was brought up, and a possible possibility of alleged, in your opinion, allegedly abusive or over sexualized childhood? Almost.
No, I think hurt people. I think it would be shocking for me to believe that Diddy did what he did without having experienced trauma in his own life. And look at the figure that was raising him. It was his mother. So, I mean, I think that she played a major role into him developing who he is.
Okay.
The maternal role plays a significant part of how you're raised. Like I said, even with my mom, if, you know, I got lucky in that she kind of guided me towards, I mean, I made bad decisions on my own, but she guided me towards what I knew was right and wrong. I think that with Diddy's mom, she was in a fight or flight situation. She was in a situation of poverty. She was struggling, and that it was like, you got to make it no matter what. You got to do what you have to do to survive. Yeah. And, you know, once you reach that level of prosperity, she's neglected. I mean, she's defending him, right? Like, she doesn't have, you know,
she has came and said that, you know, don't think he's a monster. Okay, right. So with that in mind, people are often asking us, how do these Hollywood mothers give over their kids? So do you think it's possible that there's groups of mothers who are there to persuade the other mothers to hand their kids over for a Diddy flavor weekend and all this kind of stuff? Because it doesn't take away why would someone do that and hand their kid over, but it would sort of give some of the viewers, I think, in the side chat, an insight into the possibility of mothers like Diddy's and other mothers who've given over their children wanting to, I don't know. It's like when you seen Usher handing over Bieber.
Justin Bieber's mom, where was she? Yeah,
replacing himself, if that makes sense. Yeah. So do you think that there's the possibility of individuals like Diddy's mom and other mothers that are there to sort of push the moms into making a decision?
Yes, definitely. I would not be surprised if there was, you know, a significant level of influence with the mothers, like even Justin Bieber's mom, Usher's mom. Where were they? They're accountable for their kids as minors. They're accountable for that.
Well, here's the thing. There's this whole, what's the word, side chat? It's like not a power of attorney, guardianship, right? Do you think that then that guardianship contract that is used with these kids is what is almost used as a It's okay. You know, I'm handing over guardianship, and you know, it's meant to be seen as this relief for the mother, because they're not there, but someone's legally responsible for them now.
Of course, like I trust you with my child. I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt. I need the fame equally as much as my kid does, or profiting. Look at Nickelodeon. Look at what has come up with.
Yeah, like, you know, that's a whole other live stream.
I know. I'm not
gonna lie, right? Like, I would love to dive into Schneider one night.
Yes, yes. The
one in the side chat if you want a Schneider deep dive night.
I want that because I loved Amanda Bynes, but you know, I think that that's a similar. I mean, that's Hollywood too, right? So that's a similar. You know, the conspiracy of silence is that these guardians played an enormous role into pushing them towards these predators, and you know, not protecting their kids. So,
do you think the guardianship then gives the young adult in the situation this instant connection and safety that they would have with a parent? Do you think that that's a false sense that they're lured into with that?
Sure, I feel like if my parent, like, allowed somebody authority over me, that I would trust them, right? Like, I trusted a teacher, I trust my psychiatrist, right? I trust, you know, anybody that has authority over my profession, my mental health, my well-being. You know, especially being at a young age, like now being 34, I can determine who's maybe a good influence in my life. But at that age, no, I seek the guidance of my mom, of my parents, of who I need to be around. And that's not the responsibility of the child. There is no, you know, the child should never be punished for those choices, because it's the parents, it's their guardians that make those choices for them.
I get you.
They're innocent.
I agree. This was just sent to me by Shane. Sean Diddy Combs agreed to pay $6 million in hush money to a male escort who insisted he was the disgraced rap mogul's sex slave. This fits in exactly with what you were saying about the power and the hush money and all the rest of it. And if you've got $6 million to throw around, I mean, when you say you think that he's a billionaire, I think you're probably not wrong. But one thing that I kind of mentioned, and you can put your test hat on just for a second, right, is the possibility of these people who are being filmed, right, that Diddy is there to facilitate the wants of the upper echelon, if you will, you know, because, you know, drugging regular folk and abusing them just doesn't cut it anymore. It has to be celebrities that they see. And do you think that is a possibility? Do you think that there's some sort of level to the hierarchy where Diddy was reaping the rewards of these recordings?
I think there's always, you know, an upper echelon. Yeah. I don't think it stops with Diddy. I think there are names we don't even know about that go above Diddy that influenced him. And so I think that he, not only for his own personal, like I said, with money, you know, whatever personality you have, you're predisposed to is brought out. You're not tethered by finances. You're not tethered by control. You're not tethered by dignity. He's seeking some sort of identity in these distorted behaviors that come from his distorted mindset to get any kind of dopamine rush.
Yeah.
He had to do these, or he felt that he had to do these freak offs. He had to tape them. He needed evidence of it so he could rewatch it. Because if you think about sociopaths, they want to remember it, right? They go back to the crime scene. They go back to, they want to watch it. They like souvenirs. They like that kind of stuff. But I am completely convinced that this Diddy is not the, you know, he's not at the top.
He's the low hanging fruit, man.
No, so
society point of view, he's a big star celebrity millionaire, right? But from that point of view, he's not. Here's an interesting one. So I'm going to try and answer this for you, right, Helena? So what about the doctors and vets, pharmaceutical companies that are giving people all of these drugs? And I'm assuming you're talking about the GHB and all these bottles. Well, hey, Helena, Diddy comes into your office, says, hey, come to a party with me. You know, I think your services are great. Come and meet other people. I'll plug you in. Before you know it, you're cheating on your wife out your nut. And Diddy walks in the next day with a tape and goes, so you're going to supply me, all right? And you're going to make sure it happens. I think that is a realistic way of looking at it, right? Now,
we know that pharma companies also fall into, you know, psychopathy and sociopathy. And I mean, I used to work for a pharmaceutical company myself. And I couldn't do it anymore. Yeah. And so there are levels of power. Look at Martin Scorsese. I mean, or what was his name? What was his name? Scrivelli, I forget. But he essentially was the pharmaceutical guy that went to prison for upping the cost of a certain medicine for AIDS patients. So I think that, you know, with any kind of powerful position comes responsibility. Yeah. Pharmaceutical companies, doctors, they all fall into that too. And, you know, a lot of Hollywood elites are friends with plastic surgeons, with physicians. They have their own doctors. Look at Michael Jackson, how close he was with his doctor.
Yeah. How important, because this is an interesting one, right? So this is maybe a bit off topic, but on a one-on-one basis, what are these celebs like if you took them for a drink in the pub one-on-one? Now, what I would like to sort of reshape that to is, how important is redefining yourself with a new name for psychologically becoming a different version of yourself for the public? So Beyonce or Jay-Z or these sort of brand names, do you think that there's a psychology to the comfort of not being yourself?
Ooh. So do you think there's like a one-on-one? I think that they're obsessed with their names. I think that they couldn't even take being a different kind of person. Like Diddy refers to himself in the third person.
What does that tell you?
Yeah, with interviews that he's a narcissist, that he referred, well, Diddy this, Diddy that, I'm changing my middle name to Love. I think that was in 2021 where he made that announcement, which is a huge slap in the face to all of his victims, which I believe he did intentionally. So I think that, you know, their names essentially, and look, Beyonce has Sasha Fierce, right? Her alter ego.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Their identity is centered around needing to be identified with this person. I think if you broke it down and you interviewed them and you didn't know, say I interviewed Diddy and I didn't know he was Diddy, I feel like the grandiosity would still shine through, that there would be clear signs of narcissistic personality disorder, no matter if I knew, oh, this is Diddy or if I didn't. By the way that his affect is, he seems so unaffected by interviews. He tries to like seduce his interviewers. His affect is so strange that he seems completely disconnected from reality. Like what you think about Diddy, he would never consider. He would never consider what I'm saying right now, right? Like he wouldn't think twice about what we were saying about him.
No, because he's the best. We are so far and like at the ant level to people like me, 100%. Except when you know you find some sassy evidence and then you start pointing it online and then people start deleting your accounts.
So what about
the possibility that we're seeing Love backwards, evil, the slang for evolution, the wordplay of Love spelled backwards? Do you think we're seeing hidden meanings again in that? I mean, it's a very much a intrusive thought question. Let's not waste too much time on it, but symbology and you know yourself from your conspiracies, that there's this theory that there's a theory that these individuals like to put it in our face in plain sight, as you say.
I feel like you get an extreme dopamine rush if you're just flat out using, you know, song rhetoric, lyric rhetoric, and getting away with it and whatever influence they can have on, especially the younger generation, I think, is what really the kind of dopamine rush that most sociopaths are seeking is. And the love thing, I never thought about that. That's interesting. I think the love thing, I read an interview where this sociologist, her name escapes me, but she interviewed him and he said he was officially changing his middle name to Sean Love Combs, because he loves women and he respects them, and how she felt it was incredibly superficial and like a CYA thing, like cover your.
Yeah. Head. Yeah. I mean, it seems when we look back now, the biggest slap in the face to every one of his victims.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're okay. Can we just like and share everybody one more time? I'm getting an internet spike again. Tess, carry on with what you were saying. I do apologize.
No, he was a huge, he had responded even to the Me Too movement as this movement has given me fuel to speak out and advocate women. And whatever gave him a platform, he ran with it. So that's when that whole love thing came out. And I laughed reading it because I felt the sociologist's pain of having to go interview him and have him, you know, introduce his new name. And she's like, okay.
Yeah. And so I see.
Strange.
Let's touch on the people around him, right? Let's touch on the psychology of his cronies. Let's not even think about the innocent people, the other people at these other parties, the people that were in the deep, deep realms of the darkest stuff. Where do you think their heads are at now? Do you think they're running to make deals with the FBI? Like, tell me where you think that their heads are at. And then after we've done that, I'd like to jump on and get your input on Jay-Z and Beyonce on a couple of things.
Sure.
But yeah, what do you think the cronies are feeling right now?
The cronies, I love that. That's one of my favorite words. I think so. Money entices people to keep quiet. When Diddy was a commodity since what, 1998, maybe even before then, you know, the friends he made in Hollywood, the Leonardo DiCaprios, the Jay-Z's, the whatever, were, you know, Diddy was profitable for not just himself, for other people in his circle. He made their money. So as long as he's profitable, he's a value to others. Especially if you're a narcissist or predisposed to narcissism too, you're going to want him to succeed. You're going to advocate or defend him.
Yeah. Plus he's a psychopath as well, right? So that's great for fear and control and all that.
Or retaliation. I mean, especially if you're an artist on his record label, or, you know, you're an Usher or a Justin Bieber who rose within kind of his guidance, which was misguided. But you're influenced by him, you're enticed. I mean, it's fear and it's money and it's control and power. Well, and all psychopaths want is power and control. That's their main goal, is I want power over someone. I want control. And this sounds horrible. I don't think Diddy's that intelligent, but he has the money in order to make moves.
So how about this one, right? How about the possibility this has got nothing to do with the Diddy parties and all of this, that was a byproduct of a upcoming suit for him to be done for murder of Tupac and Biggie? Do you think there's any, and side chat, I'm asking you as well, we'll spend 5 minutes on this. Do you think that we're all getting kept busy with the side quest, which is all of this that we're hearing about, when there could be building the case for finally taking him down for those murders? Do you think there's a possibility of that? Let me know in the side chat. 5 minutes. Tess, what do you think? What do you think the possibilities of that is? I know you're not in the criminal world, but what do you think?
No. I'm Tess hat now.
Yeah, Tess hat now. Yeah.
Tess conspiracy.
Tess hat on. Yeah, I'm with you.
Forensic psychology hat is off. I think that especially with American news is becoming a mastermind behind diverting attention. So a story that entices fear, entices, you know, like, and worry, like we have stories that are incentivized to divert attention from an issue that's currently going on that upper elites don't want the general public to know.
Well, listen, when we look at the case of Tupac, he was shot outside on the Vegas Strip when everyone was coming out of a Mike Tyson fight, and there was no witness statements. None of this was taken. There was never any investigation. No. Is that testament to the power of Diddy at that time?
Yes.
Are we seeing
100%? I personally think he had responsibility regarding.
Yeah.
Influence
okay. So,
over, but you know, I don't want to.
What about the fact that when we're talking about his cronies, Agent Orange is saying his cronies are also his victims? So let's for a second imagine the subcategory of crony, right? Yeah. Who, you know, was that's tempted by money. Maybe he's a security guard, right? Maybe he's on standard security guard wages. He's got kids coming. Whatever, and he is at the stage where there's a check waved in front of him.
Sure.
How many individuals do you think we're going to see come out like that this case?
Thousands, hundreds, if not thousands, maybe. I don't know. Regarding his inner circle, I think that right now, and I love that comment, his cronies are his victims, because if you think about it, his inner circle, especially people that are employed by him, that
some of maybe, them. Some of them, I will say, yeah, 100%. Some of them. Yeah,
yes.
Keep going.
Have kids. So they have children, you know, they have livelihoods, they have responsibilities. They're afraid because, yeah. you know, it's at one point it was Diddy's word against their word. Well, you yeah. go against me, you say what I'm doing, you're ruined. Good luck getting any security job. Yeah. Good luck working in Hollywood. Good luck with your reputation. Yeah. I'll ruin you. And he has, and he can. And well, so that's why I think too, the judge denied bail for Diddy was because they knew that if he went back, even on house arrest, he would have some yeah. influence to hush people. So
of course.
I don't blame people that were employed by him for being afraid to come forward. But I do yeah. think that now that he's locked up, that there's incentive since victims are coming forward, and it's very brave. Yeah. That they're going to also come forward too, because they're not afraid anymore that, I mean, I wouldn't put it past them to be afraid that they would get killed. I mean, this is serious.
That's the thing. So yeah. now that Diddy's away, right now that Diddy's away, you're going to have the people that were filmed, right? And you're going to have people that were involved that weren't filmed.
Right.
Do you think the cleaning ladies, the security staff, the Uber drivers, all these people that have been paid off that are the proper... like, oh, we've paid them off now, we never have to think of them again, are going to have paper trails for the FBI to crack. And if you, I mean, for me, I know Diddy ain't cleaning his apartment. That's all I'm saying.
No.
So I know that there is a little lady out there who has seen a madness, right?
Yeah.
Do you think yeah. that witness testimonies to like, oh, you know, I've seen the aftermath of this are going to be a prevalent thing?
Yes. I think there's just too much evidence against him. There's just too much. I think that maybe, you know, Weinstein's tried to bounce back certain people, but Diddy's on a level of where there is such an enormity of evidence against him.
That, well, it's alleged evidence currently, right? But yes, it's, yes, the, I mean, lore. It's the lore.
Until proven guilty, but
it's the lore, Tess. It's the yeah. amount of people who you find, like, for example, we discovered the other day that the Pussycat Dolls, right. There was a member of the Pussycat Dolls that was right at the stage where they got a $13 million record deal and were about to achieve their dreams. And she felt like the Pussycat Dolls were only put together to be a prostitution ring and be passed around, and she couldn't live with it anymore. And she spoke out about Diddy for 7 years and no one was listening. And when you look at bands like Pussycat Dolls, obviously they're a bunch of pretty nice looking women. I'm sure there was like 14 of them and two of them had a singing voice. Do you know what I mean? So you have to wonder, when you have a big band like that, because they were a larger than normal girl band, you have right. to wonder how many fodder members of bands like that are brought in. Shirt Swinger was clearly the leader of the pack. And she said, she didn't deny it, but she said, it's horrible to refer to us as that. And it was almost like, you know how you've got a prostitute and you think of that in your head, and then high class escort and you think of that in your head. It was almost the response of a high class escort being referred to as a prostitute and taking offense to that word rather than anything else. When we look at people and what we've been talking about with Bieber, we often don't think about the adult girl bands and all this kind of stuff. How prevalent do you think that is, where girls are put together and their whole career is based on being the meat at these parties?
Oh, I think it was Don Richards had come forward. That was in like the Making the Band, where he formulated this girl band, right? And came forward in a lawsuit, and, you know, good on her. Like, that's incredible. We need people like that to come forward.
Yeah.
But I watched that when I was little, like the Making the Band. And I remember being like, why is Diddy so controlling of these young women, like even yeah. being a young woman, thinking that it was strange, I'm a Southern, like, good luck, you know, but putting together these bands and then performing in front of him, and he's sitting in this chair and he's critiquing them. And, you know, I think that a lot of that served his own egotistical desires, his distorted, yeah. you know,
well, let's be honest. When we look at these things and we look at Diddy, that was put together to facilitate the mass assembly of young women.
Yes.
And you can assume that there were some for talent, great, monetize them. But right. see all the ones that didn't quite make it, but you might get a chance and meet some people right. at a party if you come here.
Right. Like, really, oh, even make it, oh, I might give you a chance if you just.
Well, not even that. Just like, hey, we're having a casting call out at a mansion. Come join us. And then they're all there. And then the next one, you know, the next wave of them are whittled down. Because I'm not being funny. If you wanted access to normal people, not traumatized, trafficked individuals and all this kind of stuff, that is how you would do it. And what better way than having an untapped source to gather these people together? It's a pretty dark rooted plan, if I'm being honest. It really, really is. Well, listen, everybody, we're in the last sort of 15 minutes. I just want to make sure everybody, make sure they go to Tess's channel. She's going to be launching her content soon. I know that everyone's going to want to see you back. So
I hope.
What we thought we would do was close the show with a bit of footage that Tess could maybe come back and we could talk about the possible occult and the possible ritualistic side to these individuals. And one person who we all know has been incredibly outspoken is Jaguar Wright. So let's just sort of close with this. Can you guys hear this in the side chat?
He was working on his EP. I bought Dalladelphia for him so he didn't have to sign to a company because I knew what it was going to do. He interned at Rock Nation. And they approached him to sacrifice me.
So when we're listening to a mother talking about how she set up a music, I think it was a label for her son. He went and interned at one of these massive hell holes that is the machine we're talking about, and he was told to give her up in sacrifice. This is something that we talk about a lot here, which is the real dark rooted ritualistic center of what we believe. Once you get to the bloodline levels of this cabal, that's what it's centered around. People giving their children over. People giving their children over that never come back. Those are usually babies. It's not usually the Justin Biebers and these things. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm just going to continue playing this.
He got caught up in a case. He went into the system. When he got out, got to the halfway house. I moved us here. I saw his death when he was 19. I moved us here to stop it, to prevent it, to avoid it.
Right.
And it happened anyway. And see, that's when I knew that Kanye would have never wanted Don to dead.
How many times have you heard me say that Kanye put his mom up for sacrifice and he announced it during that concert? Someone in out of the 1,500 people, please back me up that I've said this for a while.
Not even by natural causes. I was happy when he finally accepted it. Because they sacrifice your loved ones whether you agree or not.
Yep.
See, sometimes you agree and they put you in position, you know? But sometimes you disagree and they take them anyway to show you what the harm is. You know, it's. Giovanni. His death is why I do what I do, what I do.
So. Wow. You're going to meet a man this week called John Wedger, right? And he is a former police officer in the UK who his job was part of the special police that went after children and the horrible people that abused them and had to sift through all the videotapes and like witness all that. And he's seen such a level of corruption that facilitated this and individuals who partook in it. He whistle blew and John might not ever admit this, but he was told that if he outed these people and went public that he would be unalived, and he went public and suddenly one of his kids was driven off the road off of a bridge or a sideway, and was dead for a short period of time, and then came back. And he's the real deal. And when people like Jaguar talk about these, they'll come and take them, they'll do it regardless. John is an expert in ritualistic abuse survivors. That's who he works with, right? And there's this, you know, you ever heard of the 27 Club, where celebrities die at 27? Well, John tells us that it's a 13-year cycle. So you're born, you're given over to the cabal. When you're 13, you witness horrors and all of this kind of stuff, you're desensitized, and then you're signing on for another 13 years. But when you hit 26 and you're a bit more rational thinking, you've got the fame, you then enter into the first stage of having to give someone over. And if you don't, that's when you are taken out as part of the 27 Club, allegedly. Now, John knows his stuff, and I can't wait for you to sort of dive in on more topics with this. Because I think the next one, if you guys want Tess to come back, and we'll dive into the psychology of ritualistic abusers that could be at the center of Diddy and a lot of these cases, put a one in the side chat. Also, as well, I fully expect at least 100 or 200 extra subscribers. Don't be giving me 27. That's the best we can do, is 27 subscribers for Tess. Nonsense. So, mods, if you can spam that a little bit, please. Because yeah, it's good. It's good to have somebody that has such an insight from an angle that I think a lot of us are fascinated by. I think a lot of us, what is at the center of a lot of people's true crime. They like to have the psychology and the brain.
All want to know why.
Well, it's comfort. It's comfort, Tess. It's nice to know that the monster has a reason for being a monster. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
And that's where people find comfort in all of this. And during my research, I used to whittle people out and having an algorithm for who I wanted to speak to. And it was murderers or abusers or predators who have no reason for doing what they're doing. There's no triggers. There's no, I abused animals. They just, for some reason, you know, you're into collecting mugs or whatever, they're into abusing and torturing or hurting people. That fascinates me. When you're the same on paper as the monster and there's no comfort zone of reason, that's what fascinates me. That's what fascinates me.
Even there's this one serial killer that said, it makes my atoms vibrate. I mean,
listen, I've been part of a discussion with a guy who claims he sucked the soul out of someone and then murdered someone else and tried to suck their soul out, but then realized he was just off his nut on meth and handed himself in. Like, it's, but how mad is that in itself?
Yeah.
He was like, actually, I'm not an immortal being now. I'll just hand myself in. It's mad. It's mad. And I think there's some interesting characters. I think we used to have discussions with serial killers who were in prison. And one of them was a guy called Delmas Colvin. And, you know, he's 6'4", 300-pound African-American, massive dude. And he's been in prison for a set amount of killings, but we estimate it's probably between 40 and 70, right?
Yeah.
And he never woke up wanting to kill anyone. He only killed people who were really rude to him. Right.
That sounds just like a school shooter kind of mentality. Yeah.
He got into transporting huge amounts of white powder substances because there was already a dead body in the back of the truck, right? So what's a bunch of other stuff? Right. So he told us about this one person who he was in a truck stop lot.
Right.
And this night worker kept coming and knocking on the door. And if you're a long distance trucker and you leave the light on, that's when you say, come on, ladies, come to my cabin. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh.
But he never had that on. And she came five times and he said, please go away. And on the sixth time, he let her in. And that was the last time anyone seen of her. She was dumped like three states over. But this guy, you would meet him in a bar and could sit and talk to him all night.
Sure.
And never know. He's
charming.
There'll be a moment in the conversation when we've been interviewing him where you talk about a killing and he talks about it like it's grooming your dog oh yeah, you know, he's like, yeah, yeah, you know, you grab her by the goddamn neck, and then, you know, you once you got those arms around her and gravity takes over, it's just a matter of time. He was on the phone to his mum one time when he choked a woman to death. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's, I think your insight into a lot of this is going to be fascinating. And one person that I think would be a very interesting conversation to have is a man called Nico Klaus, the Vampire of Paris. I've done a series on him where the three parts of his life were being declared a vampire, being a cannibal, and being a murderer, and served 12 years for, you know, shooting someone, and then the plan was to butcher them and all the rest of it.
Right.
Got a job as a mortician so that you could take little bits of meat home and eat them. If anyone wants to see that, that is a three-part series that is currently on this channel. And if you go to the Project Rook channel, it's in a playlist. It's one of my favorite projects that I've ever done. So please go and check that out. But I think it'd be an interesting discussion because he is a self-declared monster, Satanist, narcissist, psychopath.
He's capitalized off of it, right? Like that's part of his
He is the definition of a lone wolf, right?
Yeah,
and sure. I'm telling you now, he is one of the most fascinating men I've ever had a conversation with.
I followed him on Instagram just to see a glimpse of like what he, you know,
total normal dude. He hangs out with his missus. He does artwork. He writes book. His best-selling book, The Cannibal's Cookbook, which is all the recipes what he used when he cooked people. Right? Like, but you've got to understand, he embodies everything that society is afraid of, repels.
Yeah, he's a pariah of, yeah.
No, I absolutely respect the game, son. I mean, I don't know him from the psycho murderous days. I know him now. I think he's awesome. But what a fascinating conversation.
Very.
To be able to talk to someone who has been like, do you know what? Today's the day I'm going to eat a person. Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we've got 2 minutes left. So I just want to say a big thank you to Tess.
Thank you, guys.
Your insight's been great. I think everyone's absolutely loved it. I think you're going to be a new channel favorite. So please, everybody, make sure you subscribe to Tess over on her channel. She's going to be starting her content very, very soon. We will be live in 2 minutes with the wonderful Mr. Atwood. You will all be shunted over through the power of the magic of the internet. And now I have to monologue talk for the next 60 seconds. But as we're closing, is there anything you want to say to the side chat, Tess, or for your first night with us?
Oh, I want to say I'm so grateful. Thank you, guys. I'm a newbie to this stuff. I've always wanted to use the stuff that I've learned, you know, and talk to, you know, to the public. Yeah. The best advice I think one of my mentors told me is, when you're writing a paper, do you want to write to scholars or do you want to write to people that are genuinely interested and want to understand?
Yeah.
And that's the general public. So,
well, we've got a mixed bunch of individuals here. There's a lot.
I love that. That's the best. A lot of things
from you. So look, guys, I think we're basically at the end of the night now. So thank you everyone for being here. Thank you for being so supportive, embracing all these live streams. The ones who are here every day, I can't thank you enough. So from me, Ron Swanson, as always, guys, be safe out there. Like and subscribe and share. Share and like and subscribe again. And share.